Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, we visit with Mr. Donovan Pigg, Livestock Marketing Specialist with Kentucky Farm Bureau. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy our show. Well, hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
Hey, Jay.
How are y'all doing this morning?
I'm doing good.
Me too.
I don't know about Vicki. I'm getting better.
I'm doing well. I can't complain. And we're just at the beginning of the new year when we're recording this, of course. And it's 2024 is off and running. So
we are in at the Kentucky Farm Bureau State offices in Jefferson County here in Louisville. And David, this air must be pretty good for you because you sound a little better now than you did when you first got here.
Well, I took some medicine there a while ago, so I'm doing a little bit better, actually.
Those wintertime colds can catch up to you.
That's right.
And not always timely either. They're always there when you don't need them to be.
You know, I told Vicki on the way up here, she had invited us to come to her house last New Year's Eve, and I had gotten sick. And Jody and I were talking about it, and I got sick again this year. And so I told Vicki, I said, I'm going to get up there one of these days. But it's not wasn't last year, and it wasn't this year, that's for sure. But
Well, you remember my friend Beth that you met when back last summer. Well, Beth and Jody,
they're big buddies.
They're big buddies now, and so we have this mutual friend. And so I thought, well, it'd be a good time to, Beth and Jody to catch up. But we'll make it happen one of these
Them
days.
Them two could get in trouble for a little bit, I guarantee it.
I think you're right.
Guarantee it.
I'm too old to be getting in trouble.
Something like that.
Got a guest with us today, Mr. Donovan Pegg. Good morning, sir.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Glad to have you here with us. And just start off, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where's home for you and where you live now and kind of how you came into agriculture.
Yeah, sure. Got started, I guess, my mom and dad both grew up farming. They're both full-time farmers. Grew up raising tobacco. That's what paid the bills back in the day. That's what paid the farm off. They quit the tobacco in the last couple of years, but they run a cow-calf operation. Grew up doing that in the tobacco patch. So do know what hard work is. All those guys out there that raise that tobacco, you feel a little sorry for them, but they do understand what that hard work's all about. Mm. But I was fortunate enough to go to college. I went to Eastern Kentucky University, majored in livestock production, animal science. Wanted a job with KDA or in the ag field, and that's what I was lucky enough to do is first, you know, go into KDA and Department of Ag and get a job there. But, you know, back to growing up on the farm, you know, there's nothing like growing up on that farm and being able to see those animals grow. And I was just talking to a buddy of mine here, Shane Wiseman. He's first vice president now. We're just talking about going out and watching those calves, you know, run around and be born and have a good time. You know, that's what it's all about, raising the family. And we got a farm now, me and my wife, Tara. She's an ag teacher there in Clark County. And we love raising the kids on the farm. We've got about 50 head of mama cows. Trying to ease that back down to about 40. That's kind of where we want to be. With this job at Farm Bureau, it seems to take a lot of extra time. So trying to get those priorities at home lined up to where everything works out. But I got two kids. Bailey, she's 7. She's into soccer and doing some basketball. She really likes to show some pigs. So we're tuck off with that. Fortunate enough to win a few shows here and there. Yeah. Really enjoy that. Little boy, he's 3, Wyatt. He's a firecracker. You know, he's one of those second kids. You know, he's the one that you say I'm not going to have that third because he's a wild child. You know, so but we love him. Really enjoy growing up on the farm and letting them just get out and play and run around. You get tired of them in the house, you can kick them outside and not have to worry about them. Yeah. You know, so really enjoy that farm life. We had some sheep. We do dabble in that a little bit. The kids like the sheep. We've sold out now, but we'll be getting a few back here before long. But really enjoy the farm side of it, for sure.
A farm is the best place, in my opinion, to raise a family.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of places you can raise them, but to me, the farm's the best place.
Yeah.
A lot of lessons learned there.
I think all of our listeners would agree with that and second it that there's just not another place in the world like it when it comes to raising kids. The freedom, the responsibility, the lifestyle that goes along with growing up on a farm is a wonderful environment for kids to grow up in. I too am a livestock production major from Eastern Kentucky University. So you're in good company today.
Absolutely.
off air, you spoke of originally being from Rockcastle County. What part of Rockcastle County are you from?
Broadhead area. That's where my parents bought a farm when I was 2 year old, and they're still there on the farm. They've got about 300 acres, and they lease quite a bit more. But grew up. You know, we played football, baseball, basketball, a decent football player, really wanted to go play college ball, but it just didn't work out. Eastern said I could come and walk on, but I didn't feel like it was a good idea to go get beat up every day.
For free.
You know, so I ended up just going to college there and really enjoyed my time there at Eastern and learned a lot for sure.
Well, he definitely got a good start because a good friend of mine, Mr. Jeff Hayes, was his FFA advisor.
Yep.
And so Jeff and I were state FFA officers together.
Oh,
so
okay.
I know he got a good start. Jeff was you'll never meet a finer guy than Mr. Jeff Hayes. And so I know he's gotten a good start in life because he had Mr. Jeff Hayes for FFA advisor.
Absolutely. Yeah. Jeff and Roy Reynolds, they're kind of the staple, you know, growing up on the farm, but then being able to go in there and at that school, those are the guys you go to, and that's the classes you really enjoy, is those ag programs.
I agree.
Good deal.
Yep.
That's a good part of the state down there. A good friend of ours, Gary Coffey, is the ag agent there in Rockcastle County now.
Yep, and that's right.
Years ago, I've been around a lot longer than some, but Tom Mills was the ag agent there. I don't know if you ever knew Tom or
I
not.
I knew Tom really well. I know Garrett a little bit now, but I'm going to run around with Tom a little bit, bred some heifers for him. I was going through AI class in college, so I know Tom real well.
He sees, I saw him at the Farm Bureau Convention.
Yeah, he was there. Yeah.
And first time I had seen him in a pretty good while.
Same
here. For whatever reason, me and him have gotten to be pretty good buddies, and he sees me and still remembers my name and will call me out, and we'll talk a minute, and enjoyed visiting with him there at the Farm Bureau Convention. So. Donovan, tell us a little bit about your beef cattle operation and kind of how you market your cattle and some of the things about your cattle that you'd like for us to know.
Yeah, we got cow-calf operation. We're spring and fall calving cows. Try to group those up, and then we'll wean them and precondition those calves and push them to 800 pound. And then I'll mix them with dads, and we'll go sell them together and try to get that big load lot and sell them together. Bring a little more value. Try to add as much value on the farm as I can. You know, wean, preconditioned, all the things that we all should be doing. you know, to gain that value. You know, cattle get high, people tend to steer away from that. Yep. You know, and that's one of my big things here at Farm Bureau is trying to keep people in line to get as much value for their cattle as they can. And that's something we try to do on the farm. Have a small AI program. We'll AI some cows, try to raise our own bulls. Mm-hmm. These bulls can get expensive, so we'll try to add that into our herd and be able to add some genetics there. And you know, I graded some cattle for KDA. We'll talk about it a little later, but seeing the side of genetics and how much they play in future cattle and how much that end value really matters of what we do at home and our selections.
I think, too, it's when you have your own cattle herd, and I've said this before, and I've talked to David about it and Jay, but, you know, when you have your own herd, when you're talking to other folks and trying to educate them and give them some ideas and to help them along, particularly in marketing or in production or whatever, I just think that when you're doing it on your farm, that just gives you a little bit more credibility or they can relate. They know you're a farmer too.
That's right.
You're not just somebody that's just talking about it like myself, because I don't have cattle, but you're able to give life experiences because you farm too. And I think that goes a long way when you're working with farmers and producers and trying to help them along. I think that's I think that's a good thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, and it's hard to talk to somebody about something, and whether we're talking about genetics or whether we're talking about preconditioning, whether you're talking about grazing strategies, whether you're talking about any of that stuff, without having a little bit of knowledge of it yourself, you know. And you know, one of the things I think about is kind of the bale grazing that that, you know, we're talking a little bit about at UK now, and I've tried a little bit of it, so I've kind of incorporated some of that into my program. And I've had a lot of people, and had a guy from Vicki's County that's actually going to come look before too long, you know, at what we're doing.
Sure.
And so being having that practical knowledge that you've got to be able to help people in Farm Bureau and the programs that you have that have got going on, I think is just invaluable.
Absolutely. And those life lessons are hard learned, but they pass on a lot easier sometimes. People listen to you when you've been down that road and
That's
done that
right.
before. I was finishing some cattle, and you know, this part of the state, we don't know how to finish cattle truly. So you get to finishing your own cattle, and then people ask you, and you say, yeah, here's what I do on my operation. It tends to work. Here's my cheaper feed than a true finishing ration. And you let them use that and pass that knowledge along, and it works for them, and they really enjoy it. They come back to you for their knowledge down the road. Mm-hmm. So those life lessons really, really help down the road.
Oh, absolutely, and I think you're exactly right. You talked about a little bit about working for KDA, and kind of go through that and maybe what brought you to KDA and then some of the things that you actually did while you were at KDA.
Yeah. So Mr. Agriculture, Mr. Warren Beeler, is the one that got me involved. He's the one that I think gets a lot of these young people involved. Mm-hmm. He come in and done a mock interview, and he said, man, I got a position at my office be really good for you. Now, I was a junior, so it took another year, but that in the back of my mind, I kept that there. And if somebody says you'll be good for that position, you know, that's something that you look back onto. And I was fortunate enough that he had a position come open, and it was kind of an odd position. It was a USDA beef carcass grader and a feeder cattle grader, and going to the sale barns, doing these market reports and stuff. But the cool side was the grading side. And I had no clue. Being a cow-calf guy, we sold them 800 pounds. We never mm-hmm. touched them again. And I had to really learn a lot. I had some meat knowledge from college, but it was kind of minor. You know, whenever you dive in deep and start grading cattle on quality, it's a big undertaking. So I was fortunate enough to get that job with KDA. I was there 9 years. So I felt like I had a pretty good hold on the grading side. We ended up going into a cooler and cut those animals open and give a quality grade, prime choice select standard, put a yield grade on them. Our biggest push was what could we do to help the producers? So when I started, we had a lot of selects. We were grading cattle and they were poor quality, killed them at 1,000 pound, they thought they were finished. Mm-hmm. So it took a lot of education and going to farms and being able to say, we need to hold them a little longer, we need to feed them a little harder to get them to grade. And we figured out where we needed to be, had some guys push a little farther than they needed to be, get a little too fat, and we kind of backed those up. But we try to find that 1,250, 1,300 pound steer, their grade choice. We started incorporating some genetics, really started focusing on that, and seemed to help a lot of people in their operations. So,
just for our listeners, go explain just a little bit of why that is. You know, that 1,200, 1,300 pounds, why is that spot that you want to get them to?
Yeah, that's that optimal weight. You get their frame grown out, and then they start putting that fat on, depositing fat over that tail head, through that flank, under that brisket, down through their cod fat. They start depositing fat. When they put that fat on outside, it tends to go in that muscle and in that marbling, and that's kind of what we're looking for whenever we're talking about quality. So, you know, that's where we seem to find the best fit. Some of the guys pushing them 1,700, 1,800 pound, and then they sold them for the same price these guys were selling them for at 1,250, mm-hmm. and they figured out that it wasn't making an extra profit.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. they had a lot more feed invested in them, and so we backed them back up, and we try to find that average choice, and 1,250, yep. 1,300 pound, everybody seemed to be happy. The producers were happy, they were making money, mm-hmm. and their consumers eating was really good too. So
yeah. You know, genetics plays a huge part in, you know, finishing weights.
Absolutely.
You know, and if you've got a bunch of continental breeding in your cattle,
yep.
those cattle are going to tend to be heavier, are going to have to be heavier
yeah.
to finish
yeah.
When they are supposed to. I actually toured a feedlot in Iowa, a deep pit barn,
yeah.
this past summer, and a lot of continental cattle in there, and those calves were weighing 1,500
sure.
every bit of it, and they were going to feed them another 60 days.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that ought to tell you a little bit of something about how big those calves have to be if they've got that much continental breeding in them.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I was pushing a lot of our producers to kill their heifers to finish their heifers out. They're a little less valuable on the market if they didn't have a replacement market for them. Mm-hmm. So they could add some value to those cattle. That's kind of what we strove for, is what can we do to add that value back to our producers. So
Donovan, talk a little bit about, you know, you talked about grading those carcasses in the cooler. Talk with us a little bit, maybe what differentiates a prime carcass from a choice carcass from a standard.
Yeah. Well, number one's your genetics. What genetics are behind it plays a huge role. And people always say, well, once you pull the hide off, you can't tell a difference. Well, when you split that ribeye open, 12th, 13th rib, you can tell that difference. Yep. It all comes out. So we start with their genetics. That's A number one. We've got to have some really good marbling scores, genetics in these cattle to even have a chance to grade prime. So when we're talking about marbling, that's those fine flakes of fat within that ribeye muscle. And it takes some genetics to get them to push in there. And your feed, there's three things, with genetics being one, your environment being two, how they're raised, where they're raised, if they're fighting mud, or if they're in a slatted floor barn, you know, just laying down, eating all they want. Third thing, your environment, your genetics, and your feed. Feed was a huge thing. Being able to put that yellow number two corn in them, that's what it took to get them to grade choice and prime. Mm-hmm. So that's what I pushed a lot of my guys to do.
The you know, when we talk about a little bit about the difference between grass-fed and corn-fed beef, what differences did you see there from that standpoint?
Yeah, we got several guys doing the grass-fed, and what I told everybody, it's a niche market, so you've got to find your market. In all this, some new guy comes and says, you know, I want to do this. I say, well, you go find your market, and then we'll get the cattle there. But, yeah, the grass-fed, grain-fed, either way, I mean, I'm good with both. They're grade a little different. Your grass-fed seem to be a little more on the select side, that low choice side, but that's fine. If that's where a lot of these people want to be, health reasons, don't want as much fat in them, and there's no problem with that at all. Eating experience, I think there's a little difference in it, but it's acquired taste both ways. So whatever the consumer that that you're after is wanting, that's kind of what we push them toward.
Yep. I think that's a good point to mention, that it is, it's consumer driven, and you have to have them all, really.
Absolutely.
Because not everybody is going to buy a prime. I mean, they're not. And so having, you've got to find that market and where that market's going to work for you, and then consistently produce the product for that market. And I think that's just a good thing to note, because you got to have them all.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, the price point at the supermarket will tell you a little bit about you know, what consumers are willing to pay, and and then if they're not willing to pay that, they're going to substitute that for chicken, pork, whatever. So we have to be competitive. There's no doubt about that. So we've got to feed them competitively. We've got to, you know, we can't have way more in beef cattle than we've got in pigs and all that. We've still got to be competitive to be in the marketplace to continue to survive. Donovan, tell us, did you ever have an opportunity to look at any Wagyu beef or kind of explain to the listeners maybe a little bit about the differences in that?
Yeah, first ones I really graded were Black Hawk beef down in Western Kentucky. Started grading those when they were going to the chop shop, back when the chop shop was taking cattle. First set of primes I ever seen was those kind of cattle come through there. Now, they're all, for the most part, crossbred, a Wagyu cross. It seems to work really, really good. There's not a lot of excess fat throughout, but there's plentiful amount of fat for sure. Yeah. Those cattle seem to do really good. Now, they were a little heavier. They were pushing that 14, 15, 1600 pound mark.
Right.
Those cattle are a little different and a little agier. It takes them a little longer to get there, so they were 26, 28 months old.
Yep.
But they were a niche product, and they had a niche market for them, and it doesn't work for everybody. I've got guys that do Wagyus, and they try to kill them at 1150 pound, they don't grade. And they think, well, I had a Wagyu, what happened?
Yeah.
So it's some feeding and some experience there it takes to get those cattle to finish on out. And those Wagyu seem to, you know, genetically advance, you know, where everybody else is, you know, a little bit lower in the genetics. Those Wagyu cattle have got it. It just takes them a little longer to finish on out.
Environment has a little more effect on them as well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we really need to be cognizant in that. And when we talk about genetics and whether we're going to talk about Wagyu or Angus beef or whatever, you know, we've got to think about those things that are on down the road, whether it be the environment that we're going to have them in and we're feeding them in, whether it's the type of feed that we're able to feed them, you know, all of those kind of things. And that education sometimes is a bought lesson, is a better lesson learned than some others. But, you know, I think we've all, since COVID and, you know, this has really pushed this farm-raised beef,
sure,
to the forefront. I think we've all learned a bunch about feeding cattle. And, you know, we had some bred heifers that didn't breed year before last, and we ended up killing them. They could have stood about 60 days on some of that number two yellow dent.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I actually cooked a brisket for Christmas, and the first day it had a gamier taste, and I don't know if it, you know, the resting overnight, if that made a difference, but it didn't have that the next day. But when I first cut that brisket, I took it off and let it sit there a couple of hours and first cut that, it had a little bit of a grass-fed,
really,
taste to it, because, yeah, those heifers were raised on grass.
Yeah.
And so I learned something. So my point with what Donovan was talking about, is that the education that we get a lot of times is, you know, that if I was selling that beef, I would probably not be very happy about it, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Well, and I think, too, the key word in that is education.
Yeah.
You cannot discount education.
Absolutely.
And you just can't. I mean, but sadly, a lot of times, you don't go looking for that education until you've had a fail.
Yeah. And what did I do wrong?
What did I do wrong? And then you go look for the educational part to try to figure out how not to do that again. Now, there is a lesson to be learned in that.
Mm-hmm.
There is a valuable lesson to be learned in that, because when you mess up, and especially when you mess up and it hits your pocketbook, you're not going to forget it.
That's right. Yep.
And you're going to try not to do that again. But what would even be better, if you're thinking about going into something that's a little bit different, than making sure that you gather up all that information about that before you ever start it.
Yeah, there's a ton of resources out there through Kentucky Department of Ag, UK Extension. Those guys are really knowledgeable here at Farm Bureau. We've got several guys on our team. But there's some resources out there that have been down that road and have done that before. It's a great idea to reach out and get all the information before you get started.
Yes.
I've had several guys raise a load of cattle and finish them out and say, well, I ain't got nowhere to go with them. And it's just like, well, where was your market? Where did you find a market? I didn't have a market. I just raised the cattle, you know, and they don't do very good. So those lessons are hard learned.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the big pushers, was I had my guys find their market before we had the cattle.
Yep.
You know, you mentioned finishing cattle there, and earlier you talked about adding value back into the cattle while still on the farm. Certainly finishing your own beef is one way of doing that.
Yeah.
For the producer that's not going to go down that road, what are some of the other ways that they can look at adding some value there on the farm, and then maybe retaining some of that value once those calves leave?
Sure. Big thing's genetics. If you're going to retain cattle, go to a feedlot, and you're going to sell them on the grid, sell them on the rail, you got to be sure that when those cattle are finished, they're going to grade well. So you put some genetics in your herd, you get them all close calving windows, you know, you try to get them within that 60-90 days. That way when you wean them and you go to sell them, they're going to be similar size and kind.
Uniform.
They're going to put them together, they're going to sell them as a group. It's unreal. You know, I sit at the sale barns many a nights, and they would single them, one or two here and there, come through, and they just eat those guys alive. But you get those groups of 8 or 10, and it doesn't take many. 8 or 10 in a group that's been worked, it's got ear tags hanging in their ears, they think they've been preconditioned, and you send there and you guarantee they have, those cattle will bring $20-$30 more head. I mean, it's unreal.
Donovan was real nice then when he said 60 or 90 days. He really meant about 45 to 60 is what he really meant. He's just getting into this education deal, but that's what he really meant when he said 60 to 90. But
that's the minimum, about 45 days.
45.
You've got that window out that they're more than likely not going to get sick. But I'm a guy that likes to wean them and hold on to them a little longer, get a little extra value when I can feed them at home.
Yeah.
So that's just my opinion. I like to hit that 700, 800 pound range when I sell them, and we can get a group of them. They seem to sell the best that way.
Yeah,
so. Absolutely.
Yeah, the closer they are in age when they're born too is a big deal. You know, if you can get calves that are born within 45 days of each other, they're all going to perform a lot closer together than, I mean, you know, we've got cattle that you know, we calve from the 1st of February to the middle of March, and those calves that are the middle of March are not as big as those calves at the 1st of February. I can tell a big difference in AI calves and pasture bred calves. Yeah. I mean, the weight difference is there, and if folks don't believe that, they need to try to do that on their own farm. You know, do a round of AI. Mm-hmm. And then let the bull clean up what's left, and then take those calves at the end of that weaning period, and you know, weigh those calves and see what they weigh and see the difference. I think you'll see anywhere from a 30 to probably a 90 pound per head difference.
Absolutely,
I think you're exactly right, David. You know, I think for the amount of small producers, small herd size producers we have across the state, I've always felt like AI was the number one tool that most of them were not taking advantage of. If you've got 20 cows or less, maybe for cleanup purposes, there's a reason to own a bull. But other than that, I feel like AI by far is the number one thing that a small producer should be taking advantage of.
Absolutely. You can change your genetics. Those
bulls, tomorrow.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and that's what I tell a lot of guys is, you know, really focus on genetics. And if it takes AI or if it takes embryo transfers in these cattle to really increase the genetics, especially if you're going to put those cattle back in your herd, if you're going to retain those heifers, make bulls, that's something that you can take advantage of and really increase production.
Now, Donovan, switching gears a little bit here, and, you know, every year the Kentucky Farm Bureau goes on a beef tour.
Absolutely.
Talk with us a little bit about that beef tour and some of the things that y'all try to see, and then also tell us how folks can get involved in that if they so desire.
Yeah. So I've been here at Farm Bureau less than a year now, but I was fortunate enough to go on the beef tour last year. That was to South Dakota, and it's a different world up there. And it's not as similar. We try to take somewhere similar one year and somewhere not as similar the next. Mm-hmm. But what we really want to do is get our membership involved, take them to those places, let them see new technologies, new ways people are doing stuff, the AI technologies and anything like that that they can bring back and implement on their farm to increase their production. That's kind of our whole goal, is to let them see what other states are doing to be able to bring back to their home state. So next year, it'll be 2024. We're in the 2024 now.
Yeah.
So in June, we're going to New York. That'll be upstate New York. Going to see some operations there, in contact with the New York Farm Bureau, setting up some good stops. Mm-hmm. We've got some genetic guys on the stop. We've got one dairy so far on the stop. So I think we'll have a really good time. And I think people are going to be shocked of how similar upstate New York is to Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of small farms, small producers, really looking forward to that. But getting involved, we will send that out to the counties, county presidents. There'll be an application process they'll put in for, and then they'll come here. They'll get screened through. We'll select, I think we're going to take 50 this year. Mm-hmm. To New York. So last year we took over 60 to South Dakota. It got to be a lot on the bus. We were pretty crammed in there, but we tried to take one charter bus and make a route. We're going to fly into Albany and fly out of Buffalo. So we're going to make our way across the state, see some good operations, and maybe something that somebody can bring back and take home and implement.
I know all those tours have always been really good. So if folks are interested, get a hold of your local County Farm Bureau and try to get your name put in for that.
I'll tell you, before you get there, that is a beautiful part of the country. If you hadn't had a chance to travel through there or not, it's really pretty.
Yeah, I've not been, but I've seen pictures and videos and stuff, and it looks to be really nice.
I think that is, it's just another way to educate folks. It's just another way to help producers network. It's just, it's kind of like, you know, you were saying, David, is just talking to people that have the same interest as you, and being able to learn from each other.
Sure.
And when you're on a bus together, that's a great time to do it, because you're gonna spend some time there and be on the bus, and you can, you know, network there and be able to share some information and maybe some of those fails that you've had that you help this younger guy maybe not have so much of, you know.
And you create those relationships on that bus, you know, sitting beside somebody and talking about their operation, their family, and you really grow that bond. And you see them again at a young farmers convention. You know, you go up to them and how's it going? And you create bonds on a tour or a trip like that that you just can't hardly do in the everyday. We ain't got time to sit down and, you know, discuss that at home. We got too much work to do.
Right.
So you get on a tour like that, you really become friends and be able to really talk to people and call them when you're in trouble and they're there, you know. So it's a really good opportunity.
And you begin to know people all across the state. And then if you're ever there for something unrelated and, Lord forbid, something happened, you need to call somebody and say, hey, my car's broke down. Who's a good mechanic? You know, somebody you can call.
Absolutely.
You know, it's not just about the operation. Sometimes you need to call them about something totally unrelated, but it's nice to know somebody on the other end of the state if you need them.
That's right.
You know. So talk a little bit about, and I know we've been talking a little bit about it, but talk a little bit more about what your role is here with Farm Bureau.
Yep.
I know you said, you know, you're still relatively new, haven't made it to that 1 year mark. I think you're coming up on that pretty soon.
Be May.
Yeah.
May
so, you'll be coming up on that, but, maybe some things that you've learned in the past year and just kind of what your role is and maybe some of the goals that you have going forward in the role that you hold here.
Yeah, so livestock market specialist, you know, back at my job at KDA, I was on these in these stockyards doing market reports, putting reports together. So I really got a vast knowledge of the reporting and how it works and what the guys are looking for. And that's something that I want to be able to bring to this job and kind of move forward. Education, back on the education of how to read a market report, how to go through it, what it means, what a value-added calf on there means, what a fancy calf, you know, that kind of stuff that a lot of people are like, I don't know what that means. You know, just having that knowledge and being able to kind of relay that through, working with guys, going to the farm. I feel like my job here is the relay between our producers on the farm and our federation. So if they're having an issue, a policy issue, or a neighbor issue, that's something that the Farm Bureau can do, can step in and say, all right, we got your back. We'll take this forward. You know, we'll change some policies. We'll try to get something done to help you. That's kind of my job, is to be that relay between the federation and our producers at home. I'm able to go to the farm and kind of look at operations and, you know, sit down and talk with folks and see what problems or what good things are going on and be able to relay that across. And you know, that's what I really enjoy about this job, is the freedom to get out and meet producers, go to the farm, shake their hand at the gate. I mean, that means a lot whenever you go to them and meet them at their gate.
Absolutely.
A lot more value in that. And, you know, they take you as a friend then when you come on their place and, you know, you sit down across the table from them and be able to share your knowledge and kind of help them along.
Right.
You're there on their terms.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, and that really helps when you talk about, you know, whether it's lobbying for agriculture issues in Frankfort or Washington, D.C., it means a lot to those farmers for you to be able to come out and right there at their gate and sit there and talk about those issues. And you know, Farm Bureau being that grassroots organization, we can come, you know, from the county level all the way to the state level and get those initiatives moving in the right direction.
Right.
And, you know, those policy changes that we do every year in December, you know, those are some things that having people like you come down to talk to them, boots on the ground,
that's right.
You know, is so important with Farm Bureau, and it is such a grassroots organization, and it's really important, and it's good that they have people like Diamond
Absolutely.
To do those things.
And I think, too, it really, you know, a picture's worth a thousand words, because I think then it really explains the difference between the Federation and the Farm Bureau side, I mean, and the insurance side, because of, and we'll probably say this but there is Kentucky Farm Bureau, that is true, but then there's the Federation that does so much more, does with the programming and programs that you do. And then when you have somebody like you that shows up at the farm and visits with them, it really shows them what that Federation side's about and
Absolutely.
What you all do, and that you're one of many that are doing this for different groups. And you know, it just, I think that is something that just gets confused sometimes on what the Federation is.
Yeah, absolutely. And everybody says you're going to Farm Bureau, you're an insurance agent, you know, and it's not that way. You know, on the Federation side, we're the grassroots guys, like you're saying, and, you know, we're the voice of agriculture. That's our logo and our motto. We try to be that voice for those guys that aren't going to step up and say anything, but they've got an issue. So we can go to that farm and see that issue firsthand, take that forward and say, yeah, I've been to his place. I've seen this issue. We need to fix it. You know, we need to have something go down to where we can help these guys.
And that's good. That's another good point, is that if producers are having an issue, that they can call you and say, hey, I'm having this issue.
Yep.
And then if you have two or three other producers calling you with that same issue, then we got to dig into this a little further and see what's going on.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And, you know, we've said it 100 times on this show before, and we're going to say it 100 more, but, you know, you don't have to have Farm Bureau insurance to be
absolutely
a member
not
of Farm Bureau.
That's right.
And we want you to be a member of Farm Bureau because they do a lot of great things for agriculture. Not, you know, that the insurance side is on the other side. Yep. I mean, this is the Farm Bureau Federation part, but you can go and join any county Farm Bureau for $25, $30, whatever the dues are. I'm not sure what the dues are, but they're different in every county, I think. But, you know, be a member of Farm Bureau, especially because they do so much for agriculture, and they are our voice.
Yep.
Well, and there's power in numbers.
Exactly.
When you have that many members, when the lobbyists are going up there to talk about an issue, whether it be at Frankfort or whether it be in Washington, D.C., when Farm Bureau comes in, they're gonna take the time and they're gonna listen to them.
That's right.
Because of the numbers that's behind them, and that's very important. It's very important to anybody that's in a farming operation to be able to have that voice. And you all, what makes you all different too, is that you all represent all of agriculture.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You're not just an organization that represents one sector of that. And there are groups that do that, and we need those, and those are just as important. I'm not discounting that. But, you know, with Farm Bureau Federation, you all are representing everything from certified farm markets to livestock to grain production and further.
Everything in between.
And everything in between.
Yep.
And that membership is money that is well spent for somebody to represent you at the state and national level.
Absolutely. That's the cheapest $28 you'll ever spend for the added benefits that you'll get out of it.
Yep.
Like we say, we're here. If you're a member, we're here for you.
Yep.
You know, anything you need, that's why we're here. So we're able to go to the farm and see those guys, or, you know, go to the fruit stands and see those guys.
Yep.
That's kind of what we're all about.
Well, I know, excuse me, one of the big things that you're a part of is the Kentucky Beef Expo. Tell our listeners a little bit about the Kentucky Beef Expo.
Yeah, we're kind of the leading sponsor on that. Really enjoy being a part of that. That's where a lot of our producers can bring the elite level of cattle to, and guys can come, and they do have a show there on Friday. Each breed will kind of have their own show, and then they'll have a sale on Saturday. What's really neat is a pen sale. That's kind of unique to that Beef Expo. These cattle are unhaltered, but they've got some really good genetics in them. There's some registered cattle and commercial cattle as well, but they'll be the top level cattle. Each year the cattle quality gets better at the Beef Expo, and I think a lot of guys that take those cattle home are satisfied with them. It gives an opportunity for each farm that wants to bring cattle to kind of highlight their operation, and then a lot of our guys that are looking to buy some cattle will be there and be bidding strong and take some cattle home. But really neat opportunity for Farm Bureau to be part of that as the leading sponsor. But we really enjoy working with KDA on that, kind of a joint effort. I think they put as much, if not more, in it than we do. But we really enjoy being a sponsor of that, for sure.
And when is the Beef Expo?
It is the
first weekend in March.
Okay.
Yep. It's first and second this year.
And, you know, and that's bringing the people that are looking for cattle together with producers. And you may not be able to buy anything at that sale, but you'll be able to make that connection.
That's right.
With those folks, and maybe next year, or maybe they've got some cattle at home that they're looking to sell, or that type of thing. So that's a great way to network and to get those make those contacts with people that are in that industry that are you're looking to buy some cattle or you're looking to sell some, and you know, in that way you can make that connection. Sure. And do that networking that'll help you in the future, hopefully.
You mentioned KDA, and of course we're all with Cooperative Extension, and I think that's one thing with Farm Bureau too is we all work together.
Absolutely.
We all are have the same goal, and that's to help the producers in Kentucky, and beyond too as well. Yep. Sometimes, but is when you talk about Kentucky Farm Bureau, it's you're always most of the time somewhere in that conversation you're talking about Extension or you're talking about KDA, or because we all do work together, and I think that's what's special about Kentucky. I can't say whether that's the same in other states or not, but I do know in the state of Kentucky that's the way it is, and I also know that other people outside of the state of Kentucky also recognize that.
Sure.
They recognize that we do all work together, and that is something that is such a benefit to the people in the ag industry in this state.
Absolutely.
And we certainly appreciate the working relationship that we have with Extension, with Farm Bureau, and we look forward to working with you all and for many years to come.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll have our advisory meetings, and I'm usually reaching out to those county Extension offices to be able to host those meetings and have a good meeting room. But our Extension agents are very vital to agriculture in this state. I mean, that there is an Extension agent in almost every county, if not every county in this state. And those are the first guys that you can call, and they're right down the road. A lot of them live in the same communities. Mm-hmm. And they're able to come to your farm just as I am and see those operations and help you along. You know, we're all in this together, and we're all in this for agriculture.
That's right.
Yeah, and we'll all make those connections, and hopefully in the future, Donovan will be able to come down to McLean County, maybe, and we'll have some set up some tours.
Absolutely.
For him down there, you
yeah,
know.
And I'd love to.
Make a little area. Tour through
sure.
our, maybe do
through
a little,
our area.
Through our Tri-County yeah. area there.
Absolutely, yeah, love to.
Sounds good.
Yep. That's good.
Well, that sounds good. You know, one of the things, Donovan, we always do towards the end of this show is we like to wrap things up with a timely tip. And with your new role at Kentucky Farm Bureau as Livestock Marketing Coordinator, we kind of thought that a timely tip for today would be to tell our folks to take advantage of the livestock marketing resources available through Kentucky Farm Bureau. You've touched on several of those today. If you want to just tell some of the folks where they can find you or where they can find some of these resources at.
Yeah, absolutely. On our website, we've got a commodities page on there, and we're really looking to upgrade that. We're bringing in bar chart. We'll have some futures markets on there. We're looking to create our own market report. Using KDA's weekly summary, we're going to make kind of our own highlighted report, and it'll be on there. But, you know, we're here for our guys and to be able to fast track and have, be that one-stop shop for our members to be able to get all the information that they need. But, yeah, we have that on our website under the commodity division.
Sounds great. Well, we appreciate you being here today. We want to thank Donovan for this week's information, and thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.